comfortable and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sylvie Avery.
Hello everybody, I'm Sylvie Avery and welcome to Spirit's Work, a show that's designed to stretch your mind and broaden your understanding about life on Earth, life after death, and life in other dimensions. Each week, through our connection with our spirit friends, we discuss various topics of interest and take great pleasure in listening to those who continue to walk with us and watch over us. In the most natural way, we are able to cross the divide between our physical world and the non-physical world, when my husband Mick deep trance channels an enlightened spirit guide called Gregory Hay, who has access to great knowledge and wisdom. And this week's show, we're going to be talking about gender and spiritual pathways again. It's a show topic that was suggested by Ursa in Canada, and we thank her for that. And she sent us some more questions in this week, and we're very grateful for that. And I'm sure you're going to find it fascinating. So if you'd like to join us with a question relating to our topic, it's not a reading situation. It's actually to do with what we are doing on the show, okay? But the phone lines are open, and if you'd like to join us with anything that you'd like to say about it, to join in with a conversation or a question to Gregory about it, do that. And it's in the U.S., 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's 530-876-3222. Did I say 001?
No, you
didn't. To start with, well, it is. It's 001. Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, hi, I'm Mick Avery, as well as Spirit's Work on bbsradio.com every Monday at 7 p.m. PST. We have another radio show, which is called Spirit Teaching, and you can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, CDs, maybe book an Akashic reading, or any of the other services we have to offer, please go visit our websites, which are www.spirit-teaching.com and also live at www.spiritsworkradio.com. What we're able to do as spirit mediums is to offer you the spirit world's perspective on the nature of our existence. And when I go into deep trance, Gregory Hay, who is the spokesperson for an educational group in the spirit world called the White Cloud Group, will borrow my body for the whole of the show. I won't know about anything else that happens because my spirit and consciousness are transported to somewhere else. Kind of like a deep sleep, really, I suppose. And please do go and visit our websites for a better understanding of how we work, because we haven't got time to go through too much information at the beginning of each show, because it would take up way too much valuable time, which we devote entirely, almost entirely, to spirit. So in this case, I'm actually going to miss this show that Sylvie's got lined up. I have no idea what she's doing. As is always actually the case, I don't have anything to do with the preparation of any of the shows or their content. It's entirely up to her and Spirit, really. So that's the way it should be, of course, because we wouldn't want anything to do with my mind have any input into the the show whatsoever.
No.
So all I'm here to do is to go to sleep again.
Yes.
So
pay to come and forget everything.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, well then, bye.
Sylvie,
that's you.
Look at me.
That's all right, dear.
Okay, yes, here we go. Gregory had lived life 300 years ago, but has continued to learn and evolve in the spirit world. Comes back now to share his wisdom with us for our benefit. White Cloud Group, whom he represents, were formed to bring us knowledge that will hopefully steer us toward a more peaceful and harmonious future. The group are made up of all kinds of scientific minds and scholars from all walks of life, as well as ordinary people. The information we bring is without religious bias or political persuasion, and we believe in everyone's right to their own views and beliefs. You can also find us, by the way, at secondlife.com on Sundays. That's at 1 to 2 Pacific at the Mystic Academy in the New Oracle Temple. So we'll be there this Sunday, 5th of October, 1 to 2 p.m. do join us if you haven't been on Second Life yet and you're a bit confused about the whole thing, or you get stuck and you can't find your way around, do get in touch with us at enq@spirit-teaching.com, and we will put you in touch with somebody that can get you going. It's great fun on the virtual world, and really good for networking, so do join us then. We discuss everything that we've been programmed to believe in these shows that we do, and hopefully emerge with a fresh point of view that is more applicable to life now. So, and that is no different. Anyway, here we go. I do believe Gregory is with us.
Hello, Finn.
Hi. Hi, Gregory.
Hello. May love and light and blessings be upon your pathway.
Hello.
Hello.
So, here we are. Well, that was fascinating last week, and Ursa sent us some more questions this week, and talking about basically sort of why women aren't so denoted and prolific as spiritual leaders or gurus or whatever as males are, really, and all about that. And we were talking about whether it was genetic or, well, all sorts of situations, really. And she sent us some more questions this week. So I am just going to go through them, if that's okay
yes,
with you.
Yes, absolutely so, of course.
We can stop on a few and whatever you would like. But she says, perhaps it is the role or even the duty of each of us that as we work to raise our own awareness and vibration, it is to help another to also raise theirs. This is not a position of power, is it? It's the same as offering a hand to lift someone struggling with a step.
Yes, it's a position of giving, and giving of self completely.
Yeah.
That's the point, I suppose, that really all beings should adopt. And this is purely and simply because you are trying to pass on perhaps your knowledge that you have gained, your learning that you have gained, so that perhaps people coming after you do not share in the same pitfalls that you have gone through and learn through the same customs and intricacies of life. This is obviously a situation which then may be slanted at certain stages. One could even say that it was in a state of brainwashing in many respects, because it actually induces a certain quality of I suppose, in a sense, I can't describe
surrender.
It as precursor brainwashing, in a sense,
yes.
Because
surrendering
it means
your own personality.
Yes, absolutely so, and your own view of the world. Obviously, I understand that many people need to have some shared knowledge, otherwise you would have accidents, you would have all kinds of situations occurring in physical life, and I completely understand that. Part of the pathway, however, should really surely be that you become, in a sense, in full contact with your spirit. And then perhaps many of the mistakes that human beings as individuals make would not occur, quite simply because then the mechanic would be available to you to have a full and indefinite relationship with your spirit as it actually should be. Also, I have to say that if you only depend upon information from other human beings, it means to say then, to a certain extent, you are abdicating much of your energy of learning and understanding into the research that other people have carried out. So it means to say that, what if their research was wrong? What if that was actually had some errant behavior within it, or that the whole process of where the information was received or about the information itself was actually at fault, you see? So part of the situation is, of course, you should always try to share everything that you know now, but what about if the knowledge that you have as an individual physical being was not of the quality to be shared? Now, I know, of course, that most human beings in physical life will actually think that this is complete rubbish, because they are obviously most proud of the information and the quality of life that they have created, most certainly to do with the knowledge that they have created through their situations of fault and blame and situations of chaos that they've encountered at various intervals in their human physical life, or maybe even just that they have observed in others. You see, so this is exactly the same if you pick up and read a book. You don't necessarily know that it's truth, do you? Even if it says that it's truth. That's the point. It's always going to come from one person's perspective. So it depends upon whether that perspective itself is something that you agree with. And this is part of the problem of ensuing the whole situation of the connotation of how education passes from one human being to another, purely and simply because half of it is in fact tainted, because it's not fact. And that it creates a very big problem in your world, because it means to say you actually have half of the population who are following a false premise.
Well, I think the definition of a spiritual leader is something that you should talk about then,
yes.
You know, really, to start with, because perhaps, you know, somebody's definition depends on the individual's own search and journey and state of conscious awareness.
Of course, absolutely so. But I'm saying this in all true fashion of an advocate, I suppose you could say, of looking at the middle, but also accepting that in all things, all sides of a person's view of the world or your own particular walk of life are coming from your own perspective, ideals, the way that you have interacted with it. That's part of what I'm saying, really. And in respect of your own spiritualization, the way that you have interacted with your world and the way that it has interacted with you, is something of a creates something of a dilemma, really, because half of the information that you have may well be tainted by your belief system. That means to say, remembering that belief is not fact. Belief is just a collection of ideas that you have gathered together, which form the basis perhaps of your morality, form the basis of your religious study, form the basis of your spirituality, and what you make a fist of as being your world thus far. It means to say, dear friend Hiller, that even when you are thinking of these different things, different facets, your whole situation is being coloured by your target, which is your faith. And faith, of course, as everyone knows, is a collection of ideals that have been brought together in order, in a sense, to make sense of your world. It's partly a very difficult situation when you come and ask someone to spiritualize their life journey, because oftentimes they are doing it from a unique perspective. Now, if they're honest, they're doing it from their own perspective of their encounters, their actual encounters with life. Does this mean to say we're including here all perceptions of the mind and consciousness? We all know, obviously, how deeply worrying some of these aspects of consciousness can be, purely and simply because the mind will run rings round you as a physical being. Your intellect, your intelligence, and all of that weighs up various different situations, gives the pros and cons for it. And all of these situations are created as to whether you think this is a fact or that is a fact. It's weighed up by the backing of hundreds of thousands of voices or millions of voices. Henceforth, you have the whole situation of the control and power that religion creates among its followers. So instead of having one person, and therefore you being out on your own, on a limb, in respect of what you think, feel, and believe, or what you have gathered as facts are upon your mind and your life, instead of that, you think in concert with others, as many others as you can possibly find, if that is, in fact, even the remotest pathway, so hence it will be, that you'll have millions and millions of people who are Christian. They don't all believe the same thing. They'll have different versions of it, a mishmash of different ideals, of what aspects of certain stories they would wish to follow or decide are truthful, and other ones that they decide are perhaps less important. So you have all of these different situations. But when it comes to the spirit world, what is it that you're really doing? What is it that you're really talking about? In many respects, you would engage with the spirit world, hopefully, in a realistic fashion, with both feet upon the ground, upon the solid earth. Understanding that rather than being off and away with the fairies, as nice as that would be, that you are actually very grounded. And that your experiences are based on realistic, factual interactions, rather than being tricks of the mind, or advocates of some other unknown reality. So it means then that rather than allowing your conscious mind to illuminate and run away with you, fantasizing about this or that, and using the creative aspect of conscious mind in order to help you and tell you the spiritualized story of how spirit or you react with spirit, that you actually have a real factual knowledge basis, that it's physical, that it's somehow interactive, not just with your conscious mind, but actually interacts with you in a daily way. Part of this, of course, is to do with your training and development, the way in which you allow or work with those spirit people who actually work with you from the other side of life, from our side of life. You see, so we are creating this situation here of a friendship, unique trust as well, between your side of life and ours. This situation is manifold because it comes about in unique circumstances of love and awareness.
So are you saying that the spirit world have a hand in most situations of deities and gurus and that sort of thing? That they basically have some form or another, some channel or alignment, spirit world.
Well, may have.
To have help.
I would not say most. I would say some are completely delusioned. I'm not going to point fingers at that.
But
purely and simply to say, by the rule of thumb, many of situations which happen in physical life that we have observed from our side of life, some of them may be from the deranged fruit of the mind. Errant apples in the cart, that kind of thing. Situations which can happen purely and simply because of illogical belief systems rather than factual, truthful analysis of, well, this is happening or this isn't happening. Part of this is, of course, developed because of the whole situation of trust that a human physical being in a physical life is having and creating in that life. So there it is, they have this field of trust which is developed by the unseen forces of the spirit world toward you as a physical being. Oftentimes, much of this trust is put on, is really very tenuous, in a sense, because you're always being tested to work it.
Well, maybe a difference would be in the olden days of a guru status or whatever.
Yes.
They wouldn't admit to the fact that they are communicating with the spirit world or even necessarily know it, but modern day, they do.
Well, yes, but even that is going to actually fly in the face of many different religious states. After all, for example, many religious states will actually be that perhaps to do with certain religions, they're only allowed to communicate with certain beings. And, like, for example, Christians are only allowed to allow in the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit. Well, what's that? You see, the Holy Spirit is manifest in so many different things. And so what one person's identity of the Holy Spirit, does that mean to say that it always has to adopt some male figure or something like that? What? How ludicrous is that, you see?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. don't really want to go into any specific...
No, I'm not. I'm just really making a point here in exactly the same as Krishna consciousness or anything else, you see. You are actually looking at what is it that beings in the spirit world have to dress themselves up into being in order for you to find it acceptable. Party, this is also something which would be occurring. You see, so if you, for example, as a physical being, you have it in your mind that you want to, shall we say, that you channel on demand some kind of ascended deity, then that's what you have in your mind that you want to channel. And so that's what you conjure up. Purely and simply, it's an abdicate of the mind. It's not essentially the being that you think you've got. You see? Purely and simply because you demand it doesn't mean to say you receive it. And for you to think that this lofty idea that you have somehow some control over the spirit world and over these so-called deific energies is you really misunderstanding completely the journey of spirit and not understanding your actual vibration and what it is that your vibration is capable of. I'm not saying that your vibration is not capable wholly of communicating with a so-called ascended being. But usually, if an ascended being then calls themselves an ascended being, they aren't. Quite simply by definition of the fact that they've lauded it, of the fact that they've announced it.
Well, I think we're talking about two different types of things. The modern day idea of a deity or guru is totally different. I mean, really, that we've actually, modern day person has actually put them into that position because, like, for instance, Ursa says, and we'll go back to the women in a moment.
Of course, yes.
That there's currently a great proliferation of books and other material aimed at those seeking personal growth and desiring develop awareness.
Of course.
But the most popular and most highly regarded seem to be the works of men. It's not that these works themselves are not good or worthwhile. Some are. But I wonder why it appears that more women do not enter the same arena and get quite so far, really.
Well, it actually seems to come from the respect that it depends entirely upon how that person is guaranteed and really to do with what other people are actually are taking upon that person's belief system and whether they actually feel that it is principled in the right way. I understand that this is somewhat haphazard and does not necessarily hinge upon whether the book in progress or the author or the work is that valid. It could be a completely just another rehash of the same material, which often, I have to say, would be the case. Purely and simply because if you have a whole climate of situations that then become an institution, which means that it's a whole bunch of people who are gathered together and that they all agree on certain principles and certain so-called facts only because they've... Because they all think the same thing, then they become facts all of a sudden. That's not what facts are. Facts are actual things that you can physically prove in the physical reality, or that actually relate to some, to exact same circumstances before you've actually read the book. If you have those circumstances and interact with it after you've read the book, your mind's already been tainted with the vehicle of the details that you've read. And that's my point, really. So I'm not saying or suggesting here that women are invalid in any way. They should be just as equal in all ideas and sentiments. However, much of what the whole situation brings about is that as soon as you've read a book, you've ingested somebody else's mind and somebody else's collections of thoughts and nuances of their life. Or their perceptions, their angle of how they see it. So that means to say you are ingesting this and creating it for you in your life. I'm not saying that that's wrong, but please you have to be most careful about whether these things are stated as fact or not. They only become fact because you allow them to be, not necessarily because they're scientifically proven. The situation of gender writing in as a form of formal works of publication that you then bring to yourself or bring to many others is really a matter of how that whole industry works. And oftentimes it will be that there are many, many people, published authors, who are unfortunately left behind, purely and simply, because they're not taken up. There's so much material, it then means that there are only going to possibly be a few who are actually readily accepted.
Yes, so modern-day gurus, in this respect, are possibly so because they had a good agent or a lucky break, money, or knew the right people, or whatever.
Yes, exactly so. So that's rather a lottery.
Or they are, you know, good speakers and writers, basically, but not talking about the powers of spiritual qualities necessarily that they exude. Shall we say, on a daily basis.
Yes, absolutely, friend. So what I'm saying, they may well be just echoing one another. And that's the only reason that they've become published or famous or whatever, purely and simply because they're all saying the same thing, and it's safe.
Yeah.
The point is it truth? It's not truth by definition that everyone's saying the same thing. Everyone thought that the world was flat for thousands of years, never even gave it another thought. And purely and simply by everyone thinking that, it was a fact created by the civilization of the time.
Okay. Ursa says, if these authors are mainly men and they get inspiration for their words and writings from the connection they've developed with spirit and higher consciousness,
yes.
Why does it seem that fewer women are connecting to higher wisdom or else are not disseminating the wisdom in the same way? Is it that fewer women seek to get inspiration from that source? Is there currently any greater proportion of men meditating than women? Or is it perhaps that their motivations are different?
I feel, really, that the point is here that women are connected to begin with. For men, it's something that they have to drop everything else and do and create. You see?
Concentrate on being connected, you mean?
Yes,
okay.
Quite so. So because of the fact that men, by and large, are not that able to do more than one or two things at any one time, it does mean to say that they're, in a sense, at a disadvantage in many respects. But it appears to be that for many societies, many aspects of this question actually relies purely and simply upon gender and not actually their ability. So oftentimes you will see that the situation develops, perhaps for a woman, purely and simply, that actually they have a lot more time, maybe. Maybe not. I'm not stereotyping anything. I'm just saying that some situations will be depending upon circumstance. So many women work full-time, I understand, at this time, depending upon which society you live in. If you're a Muslim, then maybe the life or the certain restrictions of religious identity mean that you are not, of course, in the same caste, shall we say. The same appreciation is not granted to you as it will be to the male of that religious understanding. Purely and simply because women were, in a sense, created to service men. I understand many women will take great umbrage at that, and I don't blame them, of course. I'm not advocating one side or another. So the situation is that I can see...
Well, it's to service creation, isn't it?
Well, yes,
really,
in a sense.
To reproduce, to keep it going, I mean...
Yes, in a sense. Of course.
Yeah.
But I understand that now that's something that could actually be done from a petri dish, so it's not actually the same situation, is it?
Okay, yeah, well, I didn't mean service in that way, Gregory. I meant supply. Whatever. Okay, let's not go there. Let's just
no, absolutely not. I wasn't meaning.
You can't have. You couldn't have one without the other, basically.
No, I understand that.
So
I absolutely understand that.
Yeah. Okay. Swiftly moving on. okay. Yes, she says that she understands that wisdom itself is not gender-specific, and I have no doubt there are a significant number of women working to raise the spiritual awareness of the people they encounter, and they are just as wise and valuable as their male counterparts. It just seems you have to look much harder to find references about them. It seems that even the spirit guides who are channeled by mediums tend to be male.
Yes, a very interesting point, isn't it? Mm. But there again, many spirit guides tend to be, if left to their own devices, that they are, well, the only serious contenders, I suppose, for females will be Joan of Arc, Cleopatra, or some other ancient queen or whatever. The whole idea is completely ridiculous. In exactly the same way as choosing a particular... others who are of the same noted status, of whatever situation it is. There aren't that many beings in the spirit world who are that famous in order for you to actually have that allotted, that being allotted as your spirit guide. So the point really is that the spirit world is full of ordinary people, exactly the same as you are. Exactly the same as everyone else is upon the planet at this present time. All having had led their physical lives, bettered themselves, worsened themselves in some situations, just as in the state of the way in which women have perhaps been more allowed to better themselves than those of males. So you actually have a situation of restriction that human beings have placed upon women to start with. Of course, that men have placed upon women. Didn't happen at the beginning because in some cultures, women were actually really genuinely revered and in that respect were treated more in akin to the way in which they should be. I'm not saying that the whole situation has turned then on its head, but that it does appear to be that, for some strange reason, why is it not that you have ordinary people who are spirit guides? Because in actual fact, that's who you've got. So the model of how it is that you're always supposed to have some deific spirit guide in order to bring you inspiration and this and that, most of the beings who are working with you and walking with you are instrumental and in a very factual way helping you through your life journey. They are just as pure spirit, just as beautiful spirit as any ascended master. It's purely a matter of your perception of what you garland that energy to be. Uncle Fred or whoever it was that passed in, shall we say, 100 or 150 years ago, has now become a being of an extreme vibration, of a really sensitive vibration.
Possibly, if they've worked on themselves.
Absolutely,
you're talking about,
yes.
Yeah.
And that their vibration will actually feel to you as though it's something magical. Of course they will, because they've actually managed to create that vibration themselves. And that's what I'm saying. It's this state of mind that people have, and exactly the same as the state of mind that people regard that women have. So many women in so many cultures are kept down. But why? I have no reason. Cannot entertain it in my conscious mind. Purely and simply because I think it's a complete travesty and waste of human life.
Okay. Eartha says that there's only two that she can find who are exemplified as having a true course of spirit in their lives, and they seem impossibly pure. And these and this is what they're known for, and that's Mother Teresa, she says, and excuse me if I don't say this right, Sri May Anandamayi, or Anandamayi, anyway.
Anandamayi, yes.
Yes, okay, yes. So, and I do believe she passed, oh, gosh, I had it written down somewhere when she passed. But anyway, she passed quite a long time ago. but is still absolutely revered. And she, others basically came to recognize her spiritual qualities. But she used to actually do some really, really strange things. She used to sort of go into these sort of trance-like states and actually contort her body and do really, really strange things at odd times. And even her family thought that she was maybe possessed or something.
Yes.
And had doctors look at her.
Yes, but is that not the case, that actually what she went through wasn't the cramps or something like that, but was actually a form of physical mediumship? That's my point.
Okay.
The spirit world were actually creating contortions within her physical state. That's something that they're able to do occasionally, depending upon the state of the physical being. And that, in itself, is something which is a very rare gift. It depends entirely upon the measure, not of spirituality, deep-seated spirituality. After all, not all mediums are spiritual people. In fact, some are not particularly that nice.
Mm.
See, just because a person's a medium doesn't necessarily make them a loving being.
Well, she said that inner voices would tell her what actions to perform and what images to visualize. And
yes, I understand that.
And she would sort of like talk at tremendous speed in Sanskrit-like language that she didn't really know. And,
yes.
You know, used to roll and dance for long periods. She'd do all sorts of different things. And she actually used to say that somebody else used to tell her to do these things.
Yes, I understand that. Because she did not actually regard her physical body as being as in a sense that she was dominated by it. It was merely a vehicle for her to be able to get from one place to another. And the whole situation, in fact, of how she regarded herself was in a sense a way of I can only describe it as an ability to enable her to get to another place to speak to people. It's quite unique, really, that she was able to think in this way of a complete release from, I suppose in a sense you could say, from individualism, purely and simply because that is the way of that scheme of thought, of the way that she regarded that she was a part of the energy of creation, if you like, of the part of God that she was.
Yeah, I thought.
And in that respect, all human beings can see the relationship between everyone. She was perfectly right that the relationship within everyone is, in fact, that you are all, we are all, a part of the infinite source. And in this respect, we are being a part of that infinite source. They would actually hold, or she would actually hold, that this is defies uniqueness, because in actual fact it means that we're all the same. And in this respect, I can understand that. The point is that what she misses or missed in her statement and her belief system was that at the point at which you move away from that which is God, which does not diminish you in any way, but it's actually your own physical perception of that individuality that diminishes you. So when you think in terms of your spiritual identity, what you should really be looking at is not your individualism because you're egotistical, but your individualism because of the gifts that you have. The gifts that of spirit that you have are intricately variable to the gifts that somebody else has. Purely and simply because of perhaps the spirit or where that spirit has come from, which soul group they've come from. It may well be defined, of course, that there is not a soul group which is affixed to gender, but that rather, when you acknowledge spirit, you acknowledge everyone, in a sense. And that really should be the way of it, you see.
Well, I think it was fascinating that although she was classed as a holy woman, without formal religious training or initiation, and actually it was, her status was based entirely on this ecstatic state she used to get in. So she did hear voices that told her what religious and meditative practices to perform, and she could meditate an awful lot.
Yes.
She actually emphasized the importance of detachment from the world and religious devotion, which I found quite interesting. And
yes.
She was born in 1896, died in 1981, but she came really quite famous and held as an Indian saint sort of thing.
Yes. I understand that, and the whole situation was actually quite rare, purely and simply because of the caste system of Indian, of that culture's tapestry, does not, it only allows women to ascend to so far.
But it's amazing.
That's really what I'm saying.
It's amazing though, isn't it? Because if you had those symptoms these days, you'd get locked up. Basically.
Well, possibly so.
Well, yeah, because you'd have voices in your head, you'd convulse, you'd be doing all of these different things, and I'm afraid you'd get locked up in an institution.
Yes, but part of the situation is, in fact, as I say, to do, especially as many of the situations that happened to her were not induced by the mind. That's the point.
No.
You cannot, by the mind, change the shape of your forehead, and you cannot exactly by the mind change the shape of your limbs. Yet it appeared to be, I'm not talking about contortion, I'm talking about actual length, as she was able to grow and diminish at will. And so the point is that this is something completely different, because you're looking at actual molecular structure which changes, and it's being changed by the spirit world to enact a certain set of circumstances to show that this is a being who is different.
The other one, Mother Teresa, now she didn't have a religion either, did she?
No, not really, actually. It was only, in a sense, purely by birthright and by the fact of what she had been, what she had moved into as a part of her religious servitude, in a sense. But that had she not been a Catholic nun, but had been something else, she would have been something else. If she had been a different nun of a different caste system, of some other situation, then that order would have adopted her as that practice and said, look, you see how beautiful our situation is because we have produced this. You haven't produced anyone. It's purely and simply because that was the being that she was, regardless.
Yes.
Even if she had not donned a nun's habit and purely and simply continued her walk of life in exactly the same way as hundreds of thousands of women do all of the time throughout their entire life, devote in terms of helping and nurturing and caring for other people. Isn't that what all women do in their families?
Yeah, absolutely.
For example,
when I said about not having a religion, I meant that she actually didn't go to get disciples and followers preaching a religion. She was who she was in whatever, like you say, in a habit or whatever. But that wasn't the common sort of like denominator of her spiritual ambience. Like,
yes, quite so.
It was God, yes.
Yes,
but we're not calling that a religion, are we? I mean, that's...
No, exactly,
that's
so.
Different.
And her devotion really was something that was organic within her. And her devotion was purely to try to ease the suffering of others. And that was exactly what she did. And she was not actually of the caste system or of the religious order that these other people were that she helped. They were actually of many different tribes, many different situations, and she recognized no boundaries. That was the point, really.
Okay.
And that really, in a sense, is what human physical people have to do. They have to climb off their horse.
Mm. Okay, something else that Ursa wanted to bring up. She says, women past and present are often revered as spirits spirits or spiritual forces in imagining, such as angels or mythical representations,
yes,
high priestesses, that sort of thing. We'll go on to this afterwards. Hello, caller. Who's speaking?
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking me.
Hello, Fred.
Hi, Gregory. Hi, Sylvie.
Oh, hi. Oh, recap name.
I'm sorry?
What's your name?
Gordon. Can you hear me okay?
Gordon, yes. Hello, Gordon.
Hello, Gordon. Hello,
yeah,
Fred.
It was on the tip,
yes,
of my tongue. I thought, I know that voice. Hi, Gordon.
Hi. hope all is well. I'm okay. And, well, yes, my question is, it's just interesting. It's running into what you were talking about just a moment ago, Sylvie, and you were talking,
yeah,
about angels and so forth. I've had initiations with angels recently, and I'd like some clarity on this from Gregory.
Yes.
From his perspective of being on the side that he's on. I'd like to know, well, I guess my understanding of it, but I'd like you to give me a greater clarity, I guess. My understanding is that if I'm doing an initiation or an attunement with anything in the universe, it's just an aspect of my higher self anyway. So this is kind of like a trick or a tool that we get, or that we use in order to connect with those aspects of our higher self. Now,
yes,
you say basically we're going to get what we, that's aligned with what we believe we're going to get, or we summon that energy to us.
Yes, partially.
Partially, okay, go ahead.
And so it means to say, dear friend, that if you have a certain set of goal beliefs, that means to say you wish to attain this or that status or this or that relationship, it becomes something that you can manipulate yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is surely the point of the pathway, the point of actually bringing about the relationship in the first place, that you use the relationship and that you hope that they're going to reciprocate. The whole point of this, surely, then, is that when you perceive that you are making contact with someone and that your perception is that it's an angel, you are going to also use automatically the whole connotation of what you see that as being. Now, if you had a being who had never interacted with an angel before or never actually seen what an angel might look like, perhaps it's someone who is blind and never even had an actual physical image ever in their mind. What is it that they're going to conjure up that an angel is?
I would
imagine. It's an interesting point.
I would imagine.
Can you hear an echo, Gordon?
Hold on. Let me turn my thing down here.
Okay.
Okay. Are you hearing me okay?
Yes, perfect.
That's a lot better. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. For instance, I guess if I were blind, I would just simply see a being of light, something that didn't have any particular orientation with my human knowledge, just a being of light, I'd assume. That's what I would see. Maybe it would have some structure according to whatever I've experienced in the past, or at the soul level, I should say.
Yes.
Well, for me, I might, because I'll get an initiation, and then I'll have someone give me a mystic reading and ask what someone who is similar to me in the way I think, in the way I feel, ask me, well, what do you see? And they might say, well, actually, I see a dragon, or actually, I see a being of light that is so blazing that I can barely look at it, or whatever it is. And for instance, they'll say that the being never actually entered into you; it just stands beside you or in back of you, and it actually illuminates your presence to a position or a point where I can't even see you. You understand?
Yes, I do understand.
I know.
But what I'm saying, though, is that these situations that are presented to you are there being given to you for you to illuminate in your pathway. So it means to say that it's as an indicator. That doesn't mean to say it's something which is of realistic value. It's there as a value, yes, for you and your energy to raise your vibration when
in creating that relationship and bringing it into your consciousness.
Yes.
But that doesn't prove that it's there. Purely and simply, it's a tool to help you to see a part of the concept of the relationship of, so say, other dimensions. But what you have to really be mindful of is whether these other dimensions are actually in reality or not, or whether they're just painted by the other person who is giving you the initiation. And this is part of the situation that I find quite difficult, in a sense, because the whole precept comes from a shamanistic theory that everything that you see in your conscious mind is creatable, or everything that you think of is purely creatable. And it doesn't necessarily mean to say that it actually has any validity in real, in your actual physical time, or even, in fact, in the universe, because it's actually a situation of relativity. So if you have another human being who is talking to you and saying, well, very well, you're going to see this in exactly the same way as you would walk them through a guided meditation. Incidentally, friend, if you did the same thing to a person who was blind, they wouldn't see a thing, because they've never seen anything. If they've never had sight, they will only see blackness. They will not see any pictures of their past soul or past spirit. It's a myth. All they will see is blackness.
Oh, thank you, because I'm pretty glad, because it's interesting, because I totally believe in that hypnotic power. Where people speak to you, and then you, they create the illusion in your mind of this is how things are supposed to be. So I always wait for it to come to me, or how I see it in my mind, or
how I see.
Because I know everyone is so unique anyway, and I always want for myself, even when I talk to you, in a sense, I mean, as wonderful as you are, I still take everything you say with a grain of salt. I'm sorry, but I mean...
No, I understand that, Finn.
I think everybody should.
And
you
that's
should,
my
absolutely,
point.
Absolutely. You should not take anyone's word as gospel without reservation. Absolutely.
Right. Yes, and, right. And what I'm saying, you see, from my perspective as a spirit being, is that I am here understanding your concepts and your precept of mind.
Right.
I am asking of you that you... do not take everything that everyone says, in fact, as a situation, because it's actually created within you. It's, in a sense, like a placebo.
But because
you take the pill doesn't mean to say it has any control over you.
But if everybody was as sensible as that, then people wouldn't be talking to these beings that are actually negative beings pretending to be.
Saints or whatever.
Or whoever, you know, and totally duping these people that we come across all of the time, you know. So,
totally,
you know,
weird.
When
I go to sleep, I have these occasionally time to time. I guess it's karmic or whatever. I don't summon them, but I guess they will come and they'll say different things to me. Of course, I challenge them in what I know, which is the Christ light. Or even if I just give like a telepathic inclination towards challenging what they're saying to me, they get angry and blow up and run away. So
oftentimes
with me, they'll come off with a very feminine energy, like try to come off as female totally, but when they get mad, you see that they're males. Their energy is so male. And anyway,
I think this is fascinating, but I think we've got to wind the show up now.
Oh, okay. I'm so glad I got this insight from you, and it's very, because by listening to you, I just want you to know that it has absolutely increased my power of discernment and ability to choose for myself. That's something I really learned a lot.
Wonderful.
I was able to prove to myself a lot of things that you've said on this show. And
that is the most important thing.
Not directly to me. But to everyone, and I've proven them. Thanks so much, Gregory and Sylvie.
Oh, thank you, Gordon.
God bless
call
you.
Again. We've missed you. We've missed you.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
God bless, my dear friend. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's probably time. I didn't synchronize my clock with the studio before we started. So.
It is correct.
Right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, lovely.
Yes, well, very well then. With love and light, I'll leave you at this time. But God bless upon your journey, everyone.
Thank you.
Question and learn.
Absolutely.
Always.
Yeah.
God
okay.
bless.
Okay. Thank you. So once again, our website is spirit-teaching.com. And I'd like to say thank you so much for listening. Do join us again next Monday on BBS Radio. My name is Sylvia Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Work. So next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.